You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Trump tweeted last week that the 2020 election should be delayed until people can properly, securely, and safely vote. Putting off the election is not something the president can legally do, but it's especially poignant as questions surface around the pandemic and the influx of absentee and mail-in voters. How do you feel about the president's tweet? Are you concerned President Trump wouldn't yield to the election results if it's not in his favor? How do you view this tweet in the context of our democracy and presidential history? We're at 800-642-1234. Julian Zelzer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of 20 books on American politics, most recently Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker, and the Rise of the New Republican Party. Julian, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be back.
Well, let's start with a bit of tape here. President Trump said mail-in voting would cause inaccuracy and fraudulence, but then he walked back the comments.
I don't want to delay. I want to have the election. But I also don't want to have to wait for 3 months and then find out that the ballots are all missing and the election doesn't mean anything.
Julian, what is your takeaway of what went on with that tweet and what you're seeing there about absentee voting?
Well, I think two things are happening. One, the president has continued to raise questions or directly attack any alternative to voting. Universal mail-in voting has been something that's been promoted since March, and the president has resisted it. So I think this tweet and the comments are part of that continuum. And second, I think he's in the process of raising questions already about the legitimacy of the outcome. And that means if there's a very close race, like we saw in 2000, this is a setup for contesting it legally. And on both fronts, he's already in some ways interfering in the process of the election before it's formally started.
All right, you mentioned 2000, Al Gore in 2000. You know, candidates have also conceded even when the election was a pregnant Chad mess. What is different this time?
Well, the major issue we're facing, obviously, is a pandemic, and we are in the middle of the pandemic, and very likely the pandemic could be even worse in many states come November. So there's a big question, not simply about hanging chads and reading ballots, but will people even be able to vote? And that's the battle taking place. What steps have to be taken? Now we're in August, to ensure that everyone who wants to vote can, and that there is no attack, so to speak, between being able to vote and protecting your health. And the president, with the support of Senate Republicans, has just not moved forward on the measures needed from the federal government to provide states with support to make this shift.
Is there any situation where a presidential election could be legally delayed?
Well, Congress actually has the power to determine the timing of the election, not the president. So the president doesn't have that authority. And the president's authority and the vice president's ends come January. That said, we've been in this situation a million times during the Trump presidency where the president doesn't have a certain authority. There seems to be no way the president can do something. And he figures out a way to do it, and there's no big response. So we have to be careful. Look, one thing he's doing now is there are cuts being made to the postal system, which is going to be instrumental in alternative forms of voting. And there hasn't been any pushback so far.
We're talking with Princeton history professor Julian Zelzer. He's our guide to looking at the November election and recent discussion by the president on delaying it and calling it into question with mail-in voting. You can join in with your thoughts on this and what you see in November. 800-642-1234. You know, Julian, the 20th Amendment was ratified to shorten the period between the presidential election in November and the inauguration. Was the 20th Amendment designed with what's going on now with this in mind? What do you make of that?
No, I mean, this was not the point of that shift. And we're in a pretty unique situation right now. This shift has, in terms of the timing of the end of the term, has survived wars. It's survived other kinds of crises. And So this is a very distinct situation, both because of the pandemic and the explicit challenge being made by the president preemptively.
Michael from Racine sent us an email and said, let's be fair, if the children can return to school, if we can reopen states, we can safely vote. You know, what parameters do you see there in being able to go to the polls?
Well, first, let's say we haven't been able to reopen safely, and it's not clear children will be able to return to schools, and it's going to be an incredibly difficult process. So the comment is fair, but it actually points to the challenges that will be faced in voting. And voting is a very particular process, at least as it's set up now. People touch the same screen. People use the same pens and pencils. There's a lot of, commonality in terms of how that process works. And so, sure, it can be done. We saw in some primaries where they didn't actually change the system, including, I believe, in Wisconsin, where people had to risk their health to cast a vote. But that doesn't mean it has to be that way. There is no reason we can't. We already have alternative forms of voting. So there's no reason we can't accelerate those in this situation as opposed to the in-person voting.
Let's look at the question of voter fraud. President Trump has said, you know, that voter fraud is a huge issue, brought it up, you know, something similar in 2016 when he faced Hillary Clinton. What do you make of his, of his sentiment on a rigged system?
Well, so far, there haven't been any legitimate bipartisan or nonpartisan studies confirming what he has to say. If you look at studies of voter fraud, the best studies out there, such as the Brennan Center, which conducted a big study back in 2017 of voter fraud and found almost none of it. It's an infinitesimal number when this kind of fraud happens. And with mail-in voting, there's not evidence of this ever in recent years resulting in widespread fraud. So the president's rhetoric is very different than the reality on the ground. And I think the bigger problem isn't fraud, it's low turnout and voting restrictions. That's a bigger threat to the democracy.
In terms of the issue around voter fraud, the president said last week that mail-in voting could delay results, especially since litigation after an election could last for months, even years. How do you interpret what President Trump said about litigation in the courts?
Well, that is a kind of a reminder of what happened in the 2000 election. And both campaigns already have established pretty formidable legal teams. So I think they're anticipating the possibility that this happens, that there is a close election. And in certain states, the results are contested. That should be easy for anyone who lived through 2000 to imagine how this would play out. And I think that comment by the president is basically setting that up and threatening in some ways that that's what's going to happen.
We have Princeton University presidential historian and CNN analyst Julian Zelzer. We're discussing the opening the president gave around election results and ballot integrity. How secure are our elections? Are you concerned about getting election results promptly or maybe months in the works? What is your reaction to the president's remarks on voting and elections? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Julian Zelzer right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about President Trump floating the idea of moving the November general election and promoting the idea that mail-in voting leads to widespread fraud. Talking about it on The Morning Show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows said on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday that the White House has no plans to try to delay the November 3rd election. But the tweet, it set off alarm bells. Meadows said the vastly expanded mail-in voting could delay election results.
He has not looked at delaying any election. What we will do is if we try to transform this and start mailing in ballots all across the country, all 50 states, what we will see is a delay because they're just not equipped to handle it.
Do you vote absentee? Are you voting absentee for the election this month in August? Are you worried about voter fraud, inaccuracy, or delay in results? Join in 800-642-1234. Julian Zelzer is a political history professor at Princeton, and he stays with us. Julian, you know, help us with historically from a presidential standpoint. You know, incumbents, they often don't lose elections. How did Jimmy Carter exit? How did George H.W. Bush exit? And what may be different this time?
Well, they did exit. In both cases, you had incumbents who were unpopular. In Jimmy Carter's case, he was bogged down by the economy and the Iran hostage crisis. And in George H.W. Bush's case, the economic recession really weighed down on his campaign. But in the end, both were defeated, Carter by Reagan and Bush by Bill Clinton, and they didn't contest the results, and they ended, with a message about what they had done, and they moved on in the transfer of power that we expect. It's unlikely, many think, that that would happen. This is not who President Trump is, and in contrast to either of those cases or other incumbents who are defeated, he's already forecasting that he won't go easily. So I think many people are rightfully concerned about how this would play out if, in fact, he is defeated.
So what happens if President Trump would refuse to leave the White House on January 20th and there are no official election results by that point?
Well, that's a scenario. I don't really know how that would play out. My guess is the results would be decided by that time. So the real question in that case is, in an imagined scenario where he doesn't want to leave, how is that handled? But I still remain confident, as we saw in 2000, that the deadlines would be imposed on recounts or contestation, and we're capable of that. I mean, look at what we have done when we wanted, either in response to military crises or even at moments with the pandemic, including the first bailout. The country can respond. It has the financial resources and it has the human power to make this work. So it's really about the will to do so, not whether we can.
When you look at Wisconsin in particular, in our April election, more than 23,000 absentee ballots were not counted due to various issues. Do you think Wisconsin and other states are able to, you know, carry out absentee voting and mail-in voting on a large scale and be prepared for November?
Well, this is the nub of the problem, meaning that those who have been promoting universal mail-in voting have argued there needs to be federal support to the states to help them in that process. And they've been making that argument since April. And so the claim isn't that this is going to be easy to do. You need people to process the ballots. You need clear rules set up for administration. And we're not doing that. So we have now, in August, set up a problem where it will, in fact, be difficult for the states. So this will require federal money and federal support if it's going to work. Otherwise, you are exactly right. For many states, Wisconsin and others, it will be hard to pull this off.
If you're just joining us, we have Princeton history professor Julian Zelzer, who is our guide to elections and with historical presidential administration context, taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Daniel now in Sockville. Hi, Daniel.
Hello, ma'am.
Hi. What's on your mind?
It's just I think it's time for Mr. Trump to go. I regret voting for that clown. The reason why I vote for that guy, because Harry Clinton is the worst choice I've ever seen since Bob Dole, George H.W. Bush, McCain, and Trump were like the worst choice I've ever seen. She was one of the in that group. But I think it's time for Wisconsin to go back to blue. It's time. I believe Trump wanted to go against Warren. He wanted to run against Mike Bloomberg. Why? Because I believe they were the worst crummy choices that I think he can beat.
All right. So Daniel doesn't see, and looking at 2016, didn't look like he had a choice but voted for President Trump. You know, what about the race now, Julian Zelzer, between Trump and Biden? What are you seeing there in terms of how people are leaning?
Well, the polls that we're seeing now in early August, and that's pretty late in a presidential campaign, are overwhelmingly in favor of Joe Biden. What we're seeing is even in states where Biden shouldn't be competitive, some southern states he is. He's doing pretty well in Georgia. He's doing very well in a number of swing states. There's states like North Carolina, which now conceivably could go blue. So if we take this snapshot and project it forward, the contested election scenario might not even be very plausible. This could be as close to a landslide as we've seen since 1984. Of course, this is a snapshot and it will change. And we also don't know how the pandemic affects the election. But right now, there's no way to look at President Trump other than a very weak incumbent going into an election against an opponent who's pretty strong, even though he's barely been visible on the campaign trail.
When you go back and look at the tweet by President Trump last week on delaying the election and questioning ballot integrity, is this to you an example of the president controlling message and controlling the agenda?
It is. And this is one of his most important skills. He has a very keen instinct about how to try to shape the national conversation and how to use something like a tweet to redirect what the media is talking about. And by sending that tweet out, he again just raised this as a possibility where the Constitution doesn't allow it as a possibility. He has now raised the discussion about maybe it's possible. And B, it's a lot better for him to talk about this and the controversy that stems from this than the fact that many states in this country are in a true state of crisis right now because of, you know, failed pandemic policies. So this is exactly what he is doing. It doesn't make it any less problematic, but this is what he will do going into November. He will try to shape, redirect, and control what the national conversations are about through his Twitter feed and through his rallies.
What has the response been from Congress and the Republican Party itself?
Well, Republicans generally have been very loyal to the president. And even in these controversial moments, there's been some rumbling about maybe what he is saying. And the head of the Federalist Society published an op-ed in the New York Times condemning the tweet, but otherwise there hasn't been much action. And in general, they have supported this lackluster response to creating the conditions so that voting can happen. So overall, the Republicans in Congress and President Trump are allied. And Democrats have had trouble overcoming this very big political obstacle they face to move things in a different direction.
Looking elsewhere in the world, in Hong Kong, discussions are underway to delay the election there. Do you know what the process could look like if it is tried to be delayed here?
It would range from the compliance somehow of Congress basically authorizing that to happen to impeachment to a process whereby Congress says to the president, this violates what you're going to do. I have no idea which path we will take. But going back to what we said earlier, there's been many moments you expect pushback and you don't see it. But it would require Congress to make that decision, not the president. It's very clear. It's not an area of gray. I think more likely is the president taking other kinds of steps to delay this, whether it's cutting the postal system funding and weakening that key part of government or setting up a contest of the election results come November.
As we start to wrap up here, what are you seeing on the virtual campaign trail and how Biden is approaching, prospective voters?
I think Biden is getting better on the virtual campaign trail. He went from being almost entirely absent to having better advertising and trying to think of online events, including the one he did with President Obama, former President Obama, to replicate some of the traditional campaigning. But I think this is still a far cry from what Democrats will need to make sure they are in strong position going into November. The best virtual ads against the president have come from Republicans, the Lincoln Project. And I think Democrats need to look to that direction to think about what to do.
Julian, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Princeton history professor Julian Zelzer, his latest book is called Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party. Coming up, we talk with the superintendent of schools of Wausau's school district about the plan to start school virtually in the fall. That's after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the work to deliver education this fall for K-12 schools. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for joining us. The Wausau School District announced last week it would start virtually in the fall with no on-site learning options. This prompted anger from parents in a Facebook group, which has attracted about 1,000 members to protest and challenge the decision. They're planning a protest for Saturday as they push for in-person learning. Parents, how is your child's school planning on returning in the fall? Will they be in a virtual setup or learning in classroom? A mix of the both. We're struggling to learn more about how this might take place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Keith Hiltz is Wausau School District Superintendent of Schools. Superintendent Hiltz, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, explain the setup that you are working with in Wausau and what was discussed last week and the plan.
Well, and so the plan moving forward is to open all of our schools in a virtual setting, which will be very different and far improved from last spring. But frankly, that conversation's been taking place pretty transparently, you know, at the board level for the last several weeks and months. And the conversation, as it has on a national and state and regional level, has varied as new information has been shared, as we consult with community health and medical experts. But at this point, we feel it's the prudent thing to do in terms of opening our schools.
You're getting pressure from parents to hold in-person classes. What can you say?
Yes, there is a lot of pressure on both sides. You know, if really in this situation, we have found there is no best solution. There are no good options. And so, you know, when we considered whether we open fully, which was, you know, certainly an option we discussed, or opening it partially, you know, in some alternating format, or in the virtual setting, which is where we ended up, we opted to go for the safest decision in terms of the interest of our students and our staff, and frankly, our community. As we look at our COVID rates here in Marathon County and the region, they continue to rise. And so we feel that as a public entity, you know, an essential public entity, that we have a responsibility to try to do what we can to mitigate that spread.
I was talking with our principal of my kids' school and said that, you know, she was saying how she could make a lot of decisions in the absence of teachers, but without teachers there to help kind of construct what the fall will look like, it's very hard to go forward. And I'm wondering, what type of involvement have you had from your teachers, and when do they come back?
We've had 13 subcommittees that have been developing our plan to return to school, and it includes teachers as well as a number of other staff. We're very fortunate in Wausau to have a team of highly qualified school nurses, you know, medically trained, and they are our our local medical experts, you know, our custodians. I mean, all of our staff have important input. So we've had roughly between 100 and 150 staff involved in creating this plan, and we continue to have more conversations to refine the plan moving forward.
What are these subcommittees working on? What are they tasked with?
Well, let's see. Obviously, there is instruction is a large piece of it. And that team, that education team, had, I believe it was four or five subcommittees working on everything from, you know, what do we do with elementary encore classes like art and music? What do we do with, recess and lunch, at the secondary level? You know, what does this virtual instruction look like? Beyond the education piece, we have teams that are focused on the social-emotional well-being of students and staff. We have teams focused on, obviously, the hygiene and the cleanliness, our food service team. We have an entire team focused on the human resources aspect of this schooling in the pandemic. Like I said, there's 13 of them. Covered roughly half.
Well, it seems, too, that your work is both trying to create an online platform and deliver that in the best way possible, but also in the background, you're trying to prepare these schools for the day that classes are in person.
Absolutely, yes. And like every other district, we've got the two other options, you know, whether some sort of an alternating schedule where half of the students come, where we are able to social distance, and then manage that face-to-face instruction with something virtual, and then obviously the full return. And in all of our conversations with parents and staff, you know, we talk about how even a full return is not going to look the same as it did before the pandemic. Between, you know, the hygiene protocol and the cohorting of students we're trying to create really three kind of new school systems on the fly, basically.
Explain what you mean there by the cohorting of students.
So as we talk to medical professionals and community health experts, an important piece is in mitigating the transmission of the virus is to minimize contact with unique individuals. So if we can keep, for instance, at our elementary schools, if we can keep, 10 or 20 students together and minimize, their contact with other students and minimize their contact with adults, that will minimize that transmission. So that is one sub-goal, one layer as we make our plans is to how do we minimize that contact between unique individuals.
I would imagine, too, your response time to a contact point in the schools would be also a huge challenge, responding to a possible case and then what you do and making sure everyone knows the protocols. What difficulties and challenges come around that?
Well, and we've had a good working relationship with our county health department. You know, they've given us some direction. We have protocol. If a case is identified, we have communication protocol. We have quarantine protocol. So we have those plans ready to go.
We're talking with Keith Hiltz, who is Wausau School District Superintendent of Schools. We're looking at what fall will look like in Wausau and elsewhere. Parents, how is your child's school planning on returning in the fall? Will they be in virtual setup or learning in person, a hybrid of both? Where are you struggling? What resources have you found to be helpful? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Keith, the spring was such a challenge for everyone involved, parents, teachers, the students. How will this fall look different in terms of the technology you're rolling out and how you are going to be able to get these students engaged in learning?
Right. Yeah, we learned a lot of valuable lessons from the spring. I know when I talk to parents, they're really the ones who are upset are really upset about the some of the experiences that their students had. And so what we've got in place, the technology, Wausau has been positioned well with technology. The only new piece of equipment we're adding is webcams for all of our teachers, and that just helps us float from virtual to blended to in-person learning. But more importantly, you know, we will have a set schedule in place. You know, students and teachers will have scheduled times where they will interact. We'll have more face-to-face instruction, you know, and more of the relationship, you know, through the screen, but at least it's face-to-face. We also have the regular grading and attendance practices will be followed this year. You know, last year, I think some students, you know, if we weren't taking attendance and we were taking grades, they really just didn't engage. So we have some of those accountability pieces in place. We're also going to be starting the school with a parent-teacher conference type meeting. We're just calling it a Ready for School conference. And we're going to schedule these face-to-face with teachers, students, and their parents or guardians, so that we can help make sure they are ready for the opening of school. We are also going to institute what we're calling a hub model, where the school is a hub of resources. And that can be used to support students or courses who have particular hands-on needs.
And in terms of laptops and the students, what technology have you dispatched to students?
Wausau School District is a one-to-one district, and so last year, again, we were preparing for virtual learning in terms of like emergency virtual and like a snow day. So we were somewhat ready, and we had sent all the devices home. We happened to use iPads and Chromebooks here, but those we did get most of those back from last school year. We will obviously get those ready and then redistribute those this fall at those Ready for School conferences.
Okay, so the students, the families, they turned those back in at the end of the year. Now you're going to redistribute those devices again at the start of the fall.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So where does your work stand today in trying to, deliver fall education? Do you feel like the timeline is doable to be able to deliver this education virtually?
Yes. As I said, we were in pretty good shape last winter to do short term. And now with the lessons we learned from the spring, we've got a number of days set up this later this summer to ensure that our teaching staff and our support staff are prepared to teach in these in this setting. And like I said, we have the one new piece of technology with these webcams. The difficulty always is, as I mentioned before, is in those layers, right? How do we cohort students? And right now, what we're really trying to focus on is helping our families with the daycare situation. We know that's a big concern of theirs. That's maybe the biggest thing we've heard. And so we're working with some of our local partners to perhaps offer some support there. We're talking, and our own employees, you know, they have children. And if we're asking our teachers to teach full time, we have to be able to support that family structure.
Let's pause there. Yeah, let's pause there with Wausau School District's Keith Hiltz, superintendent, and your questions about the fall, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're zooming in on how the fall will unfold for Wausau's school district. The Wausau School Board decided last week to reopen with virtual schooling in the fall. Hundreds of parents, though, have signed a petition in recent days supporting an in-person reopening. We have Keith Hiltz with us, who is superintendent, and he stays with us. Let's bring in a call. Now, Liam is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Liam.
Hi.
Hi, what's your situation?
I'm currently a high school student at one of the schools in Eau Claire, and we have a reopening that is 2 days in person, either Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Wednesdays, everyone is off for cleaning, and we have online schooling on the days that we are not in class.
How do you feel about this setup?
Personally, I disliked online schooling last year when the schools were closed. It was a very difficult way for me to learn, and I did not feel like I was getting the same standard of learning that I was when I was in person. and I would love for the schools to reopen in person. I know that is definitely not the safest or the best option, but I am slightly glad that we are having some classes in person, so we're able to get more in-person feedback.
What guidance have you received on the health and safety precautions? Will you wear a mask?
Oh, definitely. My in my family, one of my parents is a medical professional, and he's very adamant about me wearing a mask and following safety precautions.
Liam, thank you for bringing your situation. Superintendent Keith Hiltz, you know, this is a high school student who says virtual learning isn't for him, and he's really embracing the in-person classroom, even if there are risks.
Absolutely. I've had conversations with some of our own students. You know, my own children attended, you know, these schools as well. And yes, you know, one thing I would like to remind our students and our families about is that the quality of the virtual instruction that students will receive this year is far better than it was in the spring. In every educator I'm talking to across the state, I've just learned so many lessons from the spring. So again, that face-to-face opportunity and the schedules, the structure, the limiting of the number of learning platforms, it'll just be a far better process than it was last spring.
Well, let's talk about childcare that you brought up. Yesterday, we saw that Wausau Childcare started advertising an all-day program for children 5 to 12 years of age, where they're also helping with virtual learning. What do you see in terms of childcare and the delivery there? I mean, if you can have kids in a childcare setting, why can't they be in a classroom?
Yep, that is a question that many have asked, and you know it's similar to many other situations. You know, there are club sports going on right now, and again, you know, we are going to have very limited, you know, if any, co-curricular activities. We just feel that as a public entity that we have to, if we open up fully and expose students and adults to each other, we just feel that we're going to contribute to the spread of the virus, and we don't feel that is in the best interest of the community at this point.
So what would you advise parents who are working full-time from home and they're supposed to also direct their child's education virtually?
Right, yep. That is the main issue right now. And so, you know, like I said, we're working with some partners to see if we can expand some supervised opportunities for families. You know, I would encourage, you know, businesses, you know, the Wausau School District is a business. We have 1,300 employees and they have children, and we're trying to create some opportunities for them. I would also encourage families to look around their neighborhood. Are there families that can get together and support each other? This is a community issue. And I heard a refreshing message from our county health expert at a recent board meeting. As you know, educators tend to take a lot of responsibility just because of our care for our students and our community. And her message was, it's not just the job of the schools to reopen the schools. It's really a community effort. And so we need to find creative solutions together to solve the childcare issue so the economy can continue as well.
When you talk about looking around your community and teaming up with other families, it reminds me that micro schools and learning pods have become certainly a discussion point. How do you feel about those and creating little micro communities of students working together across families?
You know, our interest is in educating students and keeping them safe. If that's a possible solution, then that is a creative idea.
We're talking with Keith Hiltz, who is Wausau School District Superintendent of Schools, looking at what the fall will entail and how Wausau is rolling out virtual learning. You can join in with how your school is responding, 800-642-1234. Keith, as you look at the technology that you're going to load up on these Chromebooks and these touchpad devices, how, you know, what technology are you deploying here?
Again, we're not adding a lot of technology. It's really the capacity, staff capacity, student capacity, and even parent capacity. So we will be using the technology differently. For instance, when we're going to be talking to our teachers about as you deliver direct instruction, record it and then post it. So parents who are working, and need to help their child later in the day, can have access to that kinds of instruction. So really it's more about capacity than the actual technology itself.
I think some parents who have kindergartners or, young elementary school kids are saying, okay, how do I keep my kid in front of a screen when I tell him to get off the screen all day long? This is a real challenge because as parents are working at home, some kids are on the Xbox or watching YouTube videos about Lego building, as two examples there, what's happening in my house.
Yes. And again, that's one of the main reasons we're having those in-person back to school, ready for school conferences, trying to support parents and setting up, how do you set up a structure at home, to set those expectations. Again, we will partner with families in any way we can, to keep, the kids keep getting, educated, progressing through the curriculum, but also in a very safe manner.
Okay. So how do you set this up at home? What are some of your tips for parents right now?
Mm-hmm. Yep. If I were preparing a 5-year-old who's never been to school to do this, I would start practicing now, find some content on there. Kids are not going to be on the screen for 7 hours. We're probably looking at a 5-year-old, probably at more around the time frame of like 45 minutes total, broken up into 15-minute segments with things to do in between, learning activities to engage in. So it's not going to be just screen time. So I would just start to, work with my child, in that 10 to 15 minute range and get them to understand that this is a tool, and it's a place to learn things and again, just kind of replicate that experience to the extent possible.
What about for high school students who are also trying to look at college and career paths and make sure that they have all of the academics that are going to prepare them for their future? What do you say to high school students?
We will offer a high-quality instructional experience for them. Like I said, we understand the hands-on nature of many of our courses, and we will be working with our teachers and our administrative leaders to be able to create face-to-face, socially distanced, those responsible situations where students can come in and do, some of the lab work they need to do, anything really hands-on, some of the career and tech ed courses. Those will have in-person opportunities that will be created for the students.
Superintendent Hiltz, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. I know this is a hard time, so hopefully this helps some parents understand that we're really just trying to make decisions in the best interest of their children and the community.
Keith Hiltz is Wausau School District Superintendent of Schools. Just ahead, we talk with Tim Rogers, a Republican campaigning to unseat Democratic Representative Gwen Moore as part of the Ideas Network's 2020 elections coverage. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.